The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today is our festival of great master Keizan, the mother of Soto Zen. Although he was a male monk, we call him the mother of Soto Zen. Dogen was the father of Soto Zen. But Keizan, you see this lovely, gentle, kind of grandmotherly face. I really like that picture. It shows that kindness. But he wasn't always that way. As we said in our offertory, he had a terrible temper when he was young. And his mother tried to train him out of it. And he really worked at it. I've said this many times, but it's such a nice story. He just kept working at his temper and became much nicer. But then he became a monk, and later he was the disciplinarian of one of the fierce temples. And he became kind of harsh and disciplinary. It's for their good, you know. But then he remembered his mum, who tried to say, you know, she was a great devotee of Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva of compassion. And he said, he remembered her saying to him, don't be angry, practice kindness and compassion. So he changed to such a degree that he was known as the mother of Soto Zen. He was kind. He spread the Dharma to many more people than had been exposed to Soto Zen before. He had, you know, invented ceremonies for people, included the lay people much more, and was really renowned for his kindness. This is a very nice, encouraging story for us. This morning, one of the monks told me about a simile that the Buddha talked about. I hadn't heard this before. The simile of the four vipers. There are vipers who are quick to strike, but their poison is short-lived. It's not that damaging, just short-lived thing, and then it goes through. There are vipers who are quick to strike, but they have slow-acting, long-lasting poison. We may see a pattern here. There are vipers who are slow to strike. Don't get upset that fast. And their poison may be very short-lived, you know. And vipers who are slow to strike, and their poison lasts a long time. And of course, we know what the Buddha's talking about. He's talking about people. It's said that the human realm is the realm of anger and hatred. This kind of puzzled me when I thought it would be the realm of greed, but no, we're the realm of anger and hatred. And actually, if you look around, it pretty much seems like it, doesn't it? Now and at all times, you've had a problem with anger. All of us have it. All of us have anger and aversion. And if we think we don't, we're fooling ourselves, because we all have it arise in varying degrees. Some of us may be more prone to respond with anger than others, but we all have it. Some of us may be quick to strike, get angry quickly, hot, and then it passes through, you know. Some of us may be quick to strike and nurse a grievance for a long time. And some of us may be slow to get angry. It takes a while to get us riled, but, you know, then finally we get a bit upset and maybe it passes through quickly, or maybe we're one of the ones slow to get angry and slow to let it go. Nursing anger, you know, anger is something to be relished cold. Ugh. Anyway, so all of us have anger in varying forms, but we can all relate to this. But I kind of like the simile of the four vipers. We can consider, am I a quick to strike? Or am I a slow, relishing it cold? Or am I both, you know? Those of us who do have a quick temper and who are training ourselves, have noticed this, know that we really need to work on it, because there's so much damage can be done by quick, hot anger. Even a sarcastic remark can be really cutting to somebody. We can do great damage and not even know how we've hurt somebody, because they may say nothing. You may never see them again, but they may go away feeling hurt. And they may nourish cold anger for years. You never know. And sometimes you don't even realize we've said something unkind. Sometimes we may be so used to being crabby that we don't realize that actually we're kind of poisoning our environment. But if we look, at people's response, you know, you say something to somebody and they kind of pull back or they shut down or they turn away or something, think, well, what did I say there? Maybe that wasn't very kind, you know, to see how we affect people. If we feel our anger is justified, we have a long-standing grudge, this causes great harm to ourselves and others. If we're nursing anger or nursing resentment and not realizing it's a problem, that kind of poisons us because we're not really trying to change it. We're thinking it's justified, we don't see a problem. When we know we've got a problem, okay, I've got anger, I need to do something, then we can do something. It's recognizing it that really helps. Those of us who are slower to get irritated might think, well, I'm not like those people over there. I don't get angry very fast. I don't really have a problem with anger, you know. As I said, we're deluding ourselves because we all have anger, even mild irritation, slight aversion, reluctance to deal with that person over there. I think I'll go the other way or talk to somebody else. That's a form of anger, ill will. It's a form of it. It may not be overt, hot rage, but it's a form of aversion. Aversion, in a way, is a more encompassing word. Aversion to circumstances, aversion to people we don't like, things we don't care for, you know. And all of us can at least become irritated, if nothing else. We can be prejudiced against another person, something that another person could do and it wouldn't bother us. This person does and it really irritates us. We all have our own preferences. None of us is perfect. We may think we're keeping our ill will to ourselves. I'm being nice, I'm not saying anything. But it seeps out. People can feel the door warm before you even come in the room, you know. We think we're not leaking out to people, but we are. And again, a moment of annoyance or a chronic grudge or judgment, it's all anger, ill will, aversion. And we need to see it, to see what our mind is doing. Otherwise, we're just nursing poison without realizing we're doing that. And this is when our viper simile breaks down, because the viper's poison doesn't harm the viper, it's just its nature. If it's attacked, it'll strike. But they tend not to be aggressive. They tend to strike only when they're threatened, only when they're afraid, generally. I'm sure they strike to eat, but that's another matter. But for us, the poison of our anger harms us as well as others. It poisons our life. And we need to see it clearly and accept it and do something. But not to get angry because you get angry. To accept our ill will. It's part of the human condition. Everybody has it. Everybody has a self. Everybody has greed, anger, and delusion. It's part of our package. And not to think, I'm a really bad, awful person because I get irritated. I just need to work on it. Otherwise, I'm just compounding the thing. To look clearly at what we do, what we say, what we think. When we act out of anger, or speak angrily, as we said, even though just a crabby response, it does do harm. And we can see that. To have an angry thought arise and hold on to it and nourish it, that does harm too. And we don't always see that. But it affects us particularly, and it affects other people because it does seep out. What we need to do is to see it clearly, accept it, and let it go, not to hold on to it and nourish it. To see clearly, to see what our mind is doing, not to make excuses, not to justify it, but just to say, oh, I'm getting angry, I'm getting irritated, I'm getting kind of a little bit resentful about this situation. Be careful, you know. Sit still with it, don't feed it. When we recognize it, we can do something. When we don't recognize it, it tends to carry us off and we, at the very least, we're kind of grumpy and stomping around and not realizing we're doing that. Recognizing our irritation or anger or resentment for what it is and wishing to let it go. wishing not to be angry and resentful, wishing not to be judgmental. That's a good part of it, just wishing not to be this way, to do better, to change, helps us to change. Just that very wish helps us to change. And to see, you know, where what tends to trigger it, to find compassion and acceptance. Not thinking we're bad because anger arises, because as I said, we all have anger. And not just to identify with our seemingly bad qualities. Oh, I've got anger. Oh, it's awful. But then our good qualities we may not recognize. We tend to see our less wholesome qualities and identify with those. This is me. I'm an angry, horrible person. But kind and generous, well, now and then. But I don't think of myself as a kind and generous person. It just comes up naturally sometimes. We tend to recognize our negative characteristics, which in a way is not a bad thing because it helps us to work on them. Well, why is it that the world of humans is the world of anger and hatred? Why is that? You know, it's because of the fear and anxiety that pervade our lives. I'm always talking about fear and anxiety. There's so much of it. There's a lot of anger and there's a lot of fear. Life is uncertain for human beings. Fragile. Short. Our lives are short. You never know what's going to happen. Everything's kind of uncertain. We're all prone to sickness, old age and death, you know, looking on the bright side. And this is not a very encouraging prospect. You know, when you think about it, it's pretty dismal. And we tend to sort of distract ourselves with all the things, you know, the nice things of life. But we all know it's there in the background. Things can change at any moment. We can get sick. We can lose somebody we love. We can have an accident. And we all are aware of this. And I think that causes an underlying worry and fear. What am I going to do when I get old? What am I going to do if I can't walk? What am I going to do if such and such happens? You know, and then something does happen, and often we are angry as a result. Why is this happening to me? Or to the people I love? Yeah. Fear. We're afraid of other people, other nations, other. We're afraid of the other. Other people we don't know, generally. When we know them, they're not other anymore. They're part of the family, part of the nation, part of our life, and we're not other. But other is the people we don't know, and therefore we're afraid, because we don't know what they're going to do, we don't know what they're like. We don't see them as people just like us. And of course, the more we can widen that, our view of what isn't other, you know, what is part of my world, our planet. None of us is other, actually. We just think we are. We're all on this little planet together, trying to make the best of it. And if we could just remember that, that would really help. But we get afraid. And because we're afraid, we get angry. As I said, snakes, you know, mostly just strike when they're afraid. They don't strike just for the heck of it. I read a lovely story the other day by Tolstoy. I'm very fond of Leo Tolstoy. I'm not very well read, so I don't think I am. And he wrote these short stories, and many of them are really religious. He was a devout Christian. And today's Easter Sunday. It seems quite appropriate to talk about his story. And his story is this. It's called What Men Live By. Women too. There's a shoemaker living in Russia. In the middle of winter, there he is with his wife and children living in a hut. And they only have one sheepskin coat between them. And he gathers his money together. They really need another coat. This one's falling apart. So he goes out with the money they have, tries to get more from the people who owe him. Doesn't work. Nothing works. And he comes home without his sheepskins. But on the way home, he sees something beside a shrine. And he says, I don't know what that is. And he passes it by. And he looks back and says, it's a naked man. He says, in the middle of winter in Russia, a naked man? This is not, you know. First he's afraid and runs off. He thinks, I can't leave this guy here. Oh, look at it. Here I am worrying about my coat. You know, he's grumbling to himself, he's got no coat. Here's this person with nothing. So he goes back and takes one of these. He's got a coat and a jacket. So he takes the coat off, puts it round this guy, wraps him up, and says, You know, ask him what the story is, and he doesn't. He won't tell him where he comes from, this man. He just says, well, I'm here. God is punishing me. And so the shoemaker brings him home, feeds him. The wife is not very pleased because he's supposed to come home with a coat, and instead he's come home with a naked man, you know. But anyway, but their goodness overcomes them. They can't not help him. Out of kindness, they feed him, they clothe him, and he stays with them and works with them. And actually they begin to prosper because he's turns out to be a really good shoemaker. And various things happen. The first thing. It turns out in the end that he's an angel. And he's made a mistake. Because there was a woman who was dying in childbirth. And her husband had just been killed by a tree. He was a logger. And this angel sent down to collect the woman's soul and take it up to heaven. And he just hasn't the heart to do it. You know, this poor woman, she's dying, her kids, she's got given birth to twins, and they're going to starve to death. And he's really worried. He says, I can't do this. Goes back to God and says, I couldn't do it. God punishes him. You think, this is pretty mean, God. You know, it's a kind thought. And you know, but there we go. But he doesn't quite trust that all will be well. So here he is, ends up on the earth, stark naked, and here comes the shoemaker and helps him on his way, and he lives with him for a while. So he has these three lessons to learn. And the first lesson is, hang on. What dwells in man? What dwells in people? And he finds, you know, when the shoemaker takes him home and the wife gives him food, even though they have nothing, it's love that dwells in man. It's love that dwells in human beings. That is the kind of the basis that you find in people. That's his first lesson. Then after a year or two, he's still working, making boots. And a rich man comes and wants to have boots made. He says, I want boots that'll last a year. I've got this really nice leather, it's expensive. Can you make me boots that'll last a year? And they say, yes, we'll do it. So the guy goes off, fine. And the angel, they don't know he's an angel now. He's just a guy working for them. Instead of making boots, he's making slippers. And the shoemaker comes and says, oh my God, you're making slippers. We've got this, you know, we've got this special job and you're making slippers? What are you thinking? Just then, the man's servant comes back and says, the man died. We don't need boots, we need slippers. And he's made slippers. So, just as well, he'd made these slippers. Because the angel knew the man was going to die. He saw his colleague, the angel of death, standing behind the man, knew he would die and would need slippers, not boots. So his second lesson is, what is not given to man? What is not given to man is to know his own needs. The man thought he needed boots. Actually, he needed slippers. He didn't know he was going to die. It is not given to us to know our own needs. We don't always know what we really need. Sometimes somebody else knows what we need. Sometimes there's something deeper. And it turns out that the angel had made the same mistake. He didn't know what that woman who was dying needed. It was all right for her to die because a few years later, sure enough, there comes a lady with two little girls. And one of them is a little bit lame. And they come to get boots. And the angel recognizes them. And the woman explains that her neighbor had given birth, died and rolled onto one of the babies and crushed its leg. But the woman herself had come over to see the lady was okay, found the babies, took them for her own, and raised them. She had a child of her own which died, but she raised these two little girls, brought them up, and loved them as they were her own children. So the little girls are okay. And the angel hadn't trusted that. You know, he'd sort of gone back to God and said, I can't do this, and God had punished him for it. And he should have trusted him. Although it was a really kind intention, he hadn't quite trusted. He didn't know what those little children needed or what the woman needed. You know, it all actually worked out okay. So he's learned his third lesson. What men live by, not by care for themselves, but by love, he says. It's not by taking care of oneself. Those little babies didn't know what, you know, didn't have any help, but somebody else took care of them. The angel himself, there he was, frozen by the roadside. He couldn't help himself, but somebody came by and took care of him. And it's for human beings to take care of each other. We can't just take care of ourselves. And the angel says, this is because God wants us to live united and to take care of each other, not be each person for himself, but we all take care of each other. It's a really lovely story, and that's just a very kind of brief version of it. But I think in Buddhism there's lots of stories like this, of people who are really, really poor, helping someone who's even more poor than they are, someone who's destitute, and then as a result, or maybe as a result, things start to get better for that person. People who help out somebody who has nothing get help themselves. The power of merit, the power of kindness. And I think we all relate to this because everybody has that kindness within them. And everybody can understand this. Oh, how wonderful to be like that when we have very little or when we have nothing. To be able to have the fearlessness and the faith to give what we have, to give something, help another being, rather than just scurry along pretending we haven't seen them. You know? It's a really lovely story. So I thought it was kind of a nice counterpoint to the vipers. It's, you know, we see so much fear and anger and hatred in our world at present, so much of the viper stuff. And we don't see the kindness. We see greed and selfishness and all that. But the kindness of people, that generosity, is so quiet. You don't notice. They're not going to put it on the news that some poor person helped another poor person, you know. But it happens all the time. People help each other. People raise each other's kids. People help out someone who's really poor. Often the people with the least help out those who have even less, as we know. Because when you have more, you don't know what it's like. When you don't have much, you know what it's like to have very little. Somebody who doesn't have a decent coat can sympathize with somebody who's got nothing. But if you have a warm coat and you never feel the cold, you may not pay attention. So much kindness and generosity and simple goodness. As I said, it makes much less noise, but it's the power of goodness. It's stronger than all the hatred and anger and stuff we see. This may be the world of anger and hatred, but it's also the world where we can learn to do better. It's the world of training because we have a choice. We don't have to respond with anger and hatred. It may arise, but we can relinquish it. We can have the choice to practice kindness and goodness. To have compassion, compassion for ourselves and anger arises, or selfishness, or we have this impulse to just scurry by and not look. Oh, come back. What was that? Ah, oh, I can do something. Not to say, oh, what a selfish brute I am, but to say, oh, I can do something. It's not too late. I can help. To relinquish that judgment, have compassion for our weakness and selfishness and greed and anger and all that, and yet not to go with it, to pay attention to it, but to let it go and act out of kindness. We have that choice. And if we can look and see clearly what we're doing, we can choose to act on kindness. It takes courage. It takes faith. The faith that all shall be well. If I just practice kindness, generosity, keep to the precepts, not just me and myself. You know, men live by not by care for themselves, but by love, helping other beings. Great Master Keizan, he had a temper and he had a choice. So he converted his temper and ended up like that, the mother of Soto Zen. We can do this too. Thank you. It's really nice to see everybody. I hope we'll see you all at tea.